oh my. Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two.
Turn two. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Turn 2 Podcast pre-lockout edition. Oh, God, I'm going to be so sad soon. I'm your host, Matt Williams. You can find me on Twitter at MATTWI77IAMS before I turn it over to my co-host, Brian. Brian, I said I'm going to be sad, but I put this out on Twitter earlier today. Go with me. This is my half glass full rant of the day. Everyone loved how exciting it's been the last few days. And in reality, we pretty much had the winter meetings a week early. We're used to this kind of excitement. We just got it a week early. And everyone's been kind of talking about MLB should have a transaction deadline every year to guarantee excitement. Let's just say they had that. Like the winter meetings were, you know, next week, like they were supposed to be. And they ended up having a transaction deadline shortly after. Wouldn't that basically create the environment of a lockout until pitchers and catchers anyway? So in my mind, I'm basically saying, all right, we just had our winter meetings and now there can't be any more transactions until the pitchers and catchers. There's no lockout. There just can't be any transactions. So it's no lockout, anybody. It's a transaction deadline.
It sounds a little bit like denial, but also it is a glass half full. So, yeah, I mean, it's been exciting as hell. I mean, we've all definitely loved this. So I would totally be in favor of some kind of deadline. Do I think that happens? Probably not. But I mean, like, you are right, though. It's a good point. Like the excitement around the game at a time when there usually isn't a lot, you know, everybody's focused on like football, the NBA, whatever else. I think it's actually been amazing. I mean, like, this has been crazy. And even though there's been some surprising, really surprising deals, I think it's all things that probably would have panned out over the course of the winter anyway. You know, some of these decisions that have been made. Yes. So, yeah, I'm exactly. Pumped.
And yeah, and I don't think there ever will be a transaction deadline. I'm with you. I'm just saying for everyone so adamant about wanting one, if you want one, it's going to create a lockout feeling anyway. So just try not to get too sad. Today in the Turn 2 Podcast, we're not doing part two of the outfield. We'll get to that later. There's been so many crazy transactions. Everyone's talking about them, but we have to too. We talk about, you know, draft and holds and best ball. We are a little bit of a different show in terms of fantasy value for some of the players too. So we'll talk about everything that kind of happened, big and small, player by player real quick, me and Brian, and we're going to see, you know, our thoughts on who gained value, loses value, everything like that. And we were trying to decide in what order to do this. We're trying to find a site that like lists everything that happened. And I eventually just found a transaction page I liked. And this isn't in the order in which deals were announced. This was the order in which deals were officially posted. So it'll be in a random order and in random order of importance. That being said, we're kicking things off with Harold Ramirez. For everyone wondering, Harold Ramirez. Yeah, that guy from the Guardians or the Indians last year. He had a decent year filling in. You know, if you picked him up off of Fab in season long, he definitely could have helped you for a while. He was very serviceable, not a star by any means, but he gets traded to the Chicago Cubs, which of course means every day at bats because they have nothing else. This is interesting because Jeff Zimmerman, everyone, you know, if you don't know him over at Fangraphs, he does the great Mining the News articles. He's over on the Launch Angle podcast. He put out a tweet recently that said, Harold Ramirez and Wander Franco, yeah, that Wander Franco, 200 million Wander Franco. If you take their projections for next year and prorate them to 600 plate appearances, and I won't bore you with all of them, they're essentially the same. I mean, you're basically looking at roughly a 285 to 290 batting average, 330 to 350 on base, 450 to 470 slugging with about 20 home runs, 4 to 10 stolen bases. Except Franco is obviously taking 48 ADP. Ramirez is being taken in like the 550s. And his question was, are those 7 stolen bases for Franco worth 500 spots? And he doesn't talk about the, you know, the counting stats or anything like that. But the projection one is very, very, it's very generous to Harold Ramirez anyway. But just going along with this, what are your general thoughts when you read this? Because I know a lot of people are like, you know, trying to tear it down. But that's one of those things where in fantasy baseball, we always say remove the name from the jersey. We're not trying to say these guys are anywhere remotely close. But Harold Ramirez does have everyday at-bats coming his way. So what do you think of him as an individual?
I actually already was intrigued by Harold Ramirez a bit. Now, let me qualify that. You know, we're talking about like deep draft champions and FBC, 15-team mixed. Even when he was with the Guardians, because, you know, he kind of, let me be cautious how I say this. I was going to say he can do it all. But what I mean is that he's pretty capable at everything on the diamond, it appears. So I was interested because to me that leads me to think, okay, plate appearances, at bats, I like it. I took Jeff's point exactly, I think. And I think what you really can derive from this and what should be derived is Wander Franco's going too high and Harold Ramirez is going too low, or however you want to say that. Especially with the fact that Ramirez, I mean, what do you think about obviously the move, I think, is an absolute net positive. I assume he plays there. The Cubs aren't going anywhere. You know, traditionally a pretty solid hitter's park. Yeah, I mean, to me, obviously, I think it's obvious that Franco's going too high. A lot of people don't agree with that. But for Harold Ramirez, I think he's a really good option as like a volume outfielder late in drafts, though.
Yeah. So it's one of those guys. At bats is important. I said this we'll get to the Rafael Odor signing at some point. You know, whatever. Let's talk about it now. He signed with the Orioles. I put out a tweet saying, laugh if you want. He's intriguing in deep mixed drafts. And I mean like, you know, deeper than 15 or draft champions were, you know, in deep roster leagues. And I put the caveat is I'm not expecting a resurgence. I'm not saying putting him in Camden Yards is going to make him better, but he's going to have theoretically every day at bats. So kind of the same thing as Harold Ramirez. If you're putting a hitter that has transferable fantasy skills into a hitter's park over an entire year where he's going to get a full slate of at bats, things could happen. I mean, I had a couple of people poking fun at me, but essentially, yeah, he's going to have a 200 batting average. But if you're giving him every day at bats at Camden Yards, 30 plus home runs is going to happen. It's just look at it in 2019. He batted like 208. He had 30 home runs and like 90 RBIs. That ain't happening. The counting stats are going to be, you know, watered down with the Orioles. And he hasn't really ran in 2 years. But if you have him over a full year in Camden Yards, he's going to hit home runs. There's far worse end game options in a draft champions than a Rougned Odor if he is going to play every day.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Obviously, you're going to take an absolute tank in batting average. And yes. I think the thing is like with a guy as inconsistent as him, as we know him to be, obviously, is when you're setting your hitter lineups twice a week. I mean, you could, and you know this, but you could get an 0 for 20 or, you know, 3 home runs, just depending on what it is. But I am with you as a net overall season, and, you know, maybe makes him more of a best ball play even as well. Yeah, I mean, you're going to get production. It's a terrible lineup. He's likely going to play. It seems like the Orioles aren't interested in trying to compete. They already are shopping Cedric Mullins and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think you shouldn't just laugh it off, even though I did laugh actually when you brought his name up. But yeah, I think that there could be late round value there, especially, you know, I'm pretty deep into a DC right now, and it's not just second base. Everywhere dries up.
Plus he's second, third. So middle infield, quarter infield, utility. I mean, this is not a guy you're starting. This is not a guy you're looking to play. He's a, you know, if he, you know, in weekly league, full weekly leagues, if he has 7 games at home or in NFBC, if he has 5 home games Monday through Friday against a crappy team, and, you know, you have a bad matchup for someone else or you're an injury. I mean, you need these guys on the end of your bench. And it's, yeah, like I just said, at bats are hard to find at the end of drafts, and you're just kind of like grasping at straws. So you got to keep guys like this in mind.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. The eligibility is good. He's going 651 so far. Has been undrafted in like 8 of 23 leagues, but yeah, that'll definitely bounce up.
All right, let's talk about our first pitcher. Again, out of order completely. This is just in the order in which they were officially announced. The Giants agreed to terms with Anthony Descafani to bring him back. What did you think of him last year? He obviously fizzled down the stretch, but you know, the Giants did special things with pitchers. You know, we'll talk about a couple of them as we come along. I mean, maybe we could talk about now if you want to talk about Alex Cobb going there. Well, we could do that right now, actually. But what do you think of Descafani going back there for 3 years? Does that do anything for you for 2022? And then Alex Cobb, do you think he's a guy where they can kind of turn him into gold for a year? Is he a guy you'll, because his ADP is going to skyrocket because there's a narrative now with the Giants. Right. Same as it kind of was, you know, is with the Indians. So yeah, what are your thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, drinking the Giants juice. I mean, Desclafani, and you know, there's been hype around Desclafani for years. So it's not necessarily just as if, you know, the talent was never there and the Giants only could tap into it. But I like it a lot. I mean, the guy was rock solid last year. He's going 224 in NFBC DCs right now, or had been anyway. I imagine that number will probably tick up a little bit. Yeah, I think you could do worse. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys. I have some intrigue. I don't know how much I'll get him, but I would say, yeah, why not draft him? Now, Alex Cobb is obviously the more interesting name because, you know, he's bounced around, had some terrible years, dealt with a lot of injuries. I actually had a lot of Alex Cobb last year and was kind of intrigued with what he was doing early on in the season with the Angels until he got hurt again and everything. But going 342 in DCs on an FBC right now, you are right. That is definitely going to shoot up. And actually, I was going to see if the draft I'm currently participating, where he did go, because this is a room of sharp players and this is going to be pretty applicable, I would say. I can say that I am not the person that drafted him, but he went in the 18th round. So whatever, divide that by, or multiply that by 15, and that's where he's going now. So, yeah, so I think there's intrigue there. And yeah, I do think the Giants, I mean, you got to take the chance. Look at their track record the last few years. They've done some insane stuff with these pitchers. Cobb definitely has the talent. I'm certainly intrigued. I don't know that I would, I don't know if you put him over Desclafani or if you're even really comparing them, but you've got to be intrigued by Cobb.
All right. The next transaction up is Nick Plummer. The Mets signing him to a major league deal. First, I'll explain who the hell he is. I know. And then we'll get to the rest. Yeah, you're a Cardinals fan. A lot of people don't. So we'll start off with Nick Plummer, and then we'll go out of order and talk about the rest of the Mets moves that are obviously of more significance. I like Nick Plummer. I mean, as a Cardinals fan, and I'd like to get your opinion. But for everyone, 25 years old, left-hander. He is a outfielder. First round pick in 2015, 23rd overall, struggled out of the gate. In rookie ball, he batted 228. In low A, he batted 198 and 205 in consecutive years. In high A, he batted 176. In 2021, after the pandemic year, he comes in double A, 376 at bats, hits 13 home runs, 9 stolen bases, bats 283 with a 404 on base percentage, which, by the way, even in the lower minors where he struggled, still walked a ton. We're talking walk rates in the 15 to 20% range every single year. And then last year he got bumped up to AAA for a short burst, 267 with a 455 on base. The Cardinals don't add him to their 40-man to protect him from the Rule 5. He gets released, and the Mets pick him up. For obvious reasons, with Brandon Nimmo, Starling Marte, Mark Canna, we'll get to them in a second. There's no everyday role for him. I doubt the Mets are going to platoon Canna and Nimmo or anything like that, even though they're like mirror images of each other from opposite sides of the plate. But if injuries arise, which, you know, Brandon Nimmo and stuff, I mean, things can happen. This is a guy I think you got to keep in the back of your head for fantasy, because if you ever see him come up, he is someone where I could see him, if he gets every day at bats, he's just, I don't want to say he's another Brandon Nimmo, because there appears to be a million on the Mets. But yeah, he's if you look at numbers, I mean, he cut down his strikeout rate, which is brutal in the early minors. And he cut it down from 28 in AAA to 17 in AAA, or 28 in AA to 17 in AAA. if he can kind of continue with that strikeout rate and keep the walk rate up, there could be something here. So again, people, if this was just a minor leaguer, I wouldn't be worrying about it, but they did sign him to a major league contract. There is a path to at-bats here if there's an injury. So what are your thoughts, Brian? Because you know him a little bit more from the Cardinals side, but he did break out a little this year. I know some Cardinals fans were surprised they didn't try to push him on the 40-man.
I think you covered him pretty well. And actually, yeah, I was going to say it is almost like another Brandon Nimmo, really. But this is one of those things you've talked about it. A lot of smart analysts have talked about it. If there's a guy with a track record that was a high first round pick, which the Cardinals traditionally pick around 20th or so, which is where they got him, you know, that's something that you might want to bet on. And you're right. You look at the plate discipline throughout the minors, the walk rate is insane. Now, he also struck out a ton too, but that's a little bit more acceptable in today's game, even though he started to cut that down. So, I'd say keep your eye on him. Nobody's really going to be, I guess in a DC, you may be drafting him late. He has not been drafted yet. So now this is pretty recent news. So I'd keep my eye on him, especially, no offense to the Mets. Injuries are usually something that they're dealing with.
They have an older outfield. There's a path here. I mean, there's not an immediate path because you need something to happen, but it's just one of those things, even in full season leagues. Remember how bad I told everyone listening, how bad I said he was early in his career. The batting average is 228, 198, 205, 176. Here's his weighted runs created plus, which is the measures your offense going through the entire thing, 100 being league average, 127, 95, 105, 88. Those are the bad years.
Right.
And then 142 and 153. I mean, he pulled out a 95, a 105, and a 127 in years where he batted around 200. I mean, there's some talent here. And if for some reason he escapes or he finds his way into some kind of role with at bats, just a name to kind of keep in your mind while everyone else is thinking of these amazing prospects they're going to spend tons of money on. If Nick Plummer finds his way to at bats, keep an eye there. But skipping over to the people with at bats, the New York Mets have signed quite a few players. Let's start in the outfield. Let's just go with the first outfielder they signed, Mark Canna. He's a right-handed Brandon Nimmo, essentially. He's got pop, he's got some speed, but basically he gets on base. He's fun, he works hard, he flips bats. So I think in right field every day, he's going to be sharp, except unlike Oakland, which was obviously a cavernous, horrible park, he's not going to be batting first or second, most likely for the Mets. He's probably looking more like batting fifth, sixth, which is fine. He's perfectly equipped to do that from a fantasy standpoint. As much as I love it as a Mets fan, this isn't really ideal for anyone that is currently invested in Mark Canna. It's a better probably environment overall, but you know, you want volume, especially with an on-base guy, and he's going to be batting lower in a lineup. So where do you like Mark Canna? Does this move change anything for you? Do you think it's a wash? What do you think for Mark Canna?
I think it's almost the wash, maybe a slight downgrade, but I will say that Canna is a guy that I already had interest in and did last year, frankly, too, just because, you know, right-handed bat is able to get on base, plays, you know. So, I mean, for me, it checks a lot of boxes that, you know, runs here and there. He does that death by a thousand paper cuts method of stolen bases like you talk about. I'm happy that he got a team and that he's, you know, signed now. I think that might boost him a little bit. I actually have him on the team that I'm drafting right now, believe it or not. But yeah, he was going 263 overall. I think it maybe sticks around there, but I have intrigue in him. He's a guy that, you know, plays every day, gets at bats, can do a little bit of everything. You'd maybe like the batting average to be a little bit better, but I still am interested in Canna as a guy that's going to play.
Okay. And the main course here for the Mets as far as outfield is Starling Marte. They bring him over last year, batted 310, 383, 458, which is insane. He had a 372 BABIP, which he is capable of. I mean, he's done it actually several times earlier in his career. I would say bringing him back to his average of around 320 seems like a more likely bet. Maybe if he's, motivated, he can be like 330 or higher. That's fine. But the 310 batting average, I wouldn't bet on. I think, you know, bring him back down to like the 280, 290 ranges, I think is appropriate. Last year, he steals 47 bases in only 120 games. He's now going to be playing center field and, in my opinion, should bat leadoff. I know a lot of people have Brandon Nimmo still doing that because of his on-base machine. I don't know why in a million years you would do that. Why would you want to clog the base with a surefire on-base guy with your stolen base threat? An immense one. I think Marte should and will lead off. And then you have Brandon Nimmo taking pitches like a madman behind him. I think that is a perfect fit. So hopefully they do bat Marte lineup batting leadoff. I'm not worried about his age as much. I mean, he's going to get days off. So that's one thing, but he still is going to get plenty of at-bats. I mean, 120 games. He still had 526 at-bats last year. In 2019, in only 130 games, he still had 586 plate appearances. I mean, he's going to get his no matter what. He's very talented. So going on a one-year basis, the age thing doesn't worry me. I think that this elite stolen base guys were hard to find. So I don't know how much they're going to have him run in Queens, but they don't run like crazy in Oakland, but they let him go because he's a special dude. So yeah, I'm all over Marte. This doesn't necessarily change anything for me. I don't know if he could have signed anywhere where I would have been more or less excited. I think, you know, I wouldn't have liked it if he had ended up in, I don't know. I don't think it would have mattered. I think that he's kind of is who he is. He would have been slightly more or less exciting depending on where he signed. And I'm excited as a Mets fan, but in general, yeah, the only thing that would suck if they bat him second. I would hate that.
Yeah. I don't think they'll do that. I agree with you, but you know, we were talking about him on the outfield episode last week, and I'm kind of in the minority as somebody who I feel a little bit about, we don't talk enough about some of his injury history. Like he does pretty frequently miss time. Maybe he gets bonus points for the COVID season. He actually played 61 games, but yeah, I think Rob Silver actually on the Launch Angle pod the other day, might have been Zimmerman, but I think it was Rob Silver, brought this up as well. And it's something I've been thinking about too, is that, you know, he has missed time very frequently over his career. So he is a risk for me. I'm not as willing to invest in the second round or third that most people have been. You pretty much called him going to the Mets. I think a lot of people maybe figured that was going to happen. But as far as like, how much it changes his value, I think it's a serviceable place to sign. I think he will lead off, which is definitely a boon. He's going to run still and everything. I personally, in terms of fantasy though, am a little, you know, I'm not really into taking him there just because of some of the injury history. But I'm with you. He is an elite base stealer.
I would love to. I mean, they have Nick Plummer. Like we already said, they have Brandon Nimmo. I'd love to see them get another bat. We have plenty of flexibility and maybe rotate some of these guys because they all have kind of their own injuries. So hopefully they keep them fresh. They don't push them too far and they have a good plan. But yeah, there's reason to worry, but there's reason to get excited. I think he's appropriately priced. You just got to plan accordingly and with your risk for the rest of the draft. So I do agree with what you said. The rest of the Mets, again, I don't want to monopolize the entire show because of my excitement around my own team, but they made a lot of moves independently. Eduardo Escobar, they have signed him as well. By now, if you're not on board with Escobar, I think you kind of need to be. A lot of people might be wary because you look at how much Eugenio Suarez fell off. It took everyone so long to get on board with him, and when everyone was finally on board, he crashed. Escobar hits home runs. No matter what his batting profile, the man's going to hit like 30 home runs. And he is very flexible. Mets did not go out there and match Javier Baez, so they very well could have, and they decided not to. They're probably going to be trading from McNeil, Dom, and JD in order to maybe bring in starting pitching. So I think that leaves Eduardo Escobar with, no matter what they do, even if they sign a Chris Bryant, he will get probably everyday at bats, regardless of what they do, either at second base or third base. So I think this is a good lineup for him to be in. He should be hitting right smack dab in the center of it, around batting maybe fifth or sixth. So I think this is a great spot for him to be in. He performs well at the park. If you actually overlay that thing they do on Baseball Savant, somewhat flawed because you're not playing all your games at one park, but if you actually overlaid his 2021 season at Citi Field, he actually gained like 10 home runs or something crazy. So his swing does work well as a switch hitter at Citi Field. So I like him. I think I like him a little more than I did, but that's probably, again, me wearing my blue and orange rose colored glasses here, being excited for my own team. But yeah, I think this is a good spot. He's, you know, guaranteed to get at bats, which the way things ended for him last year on a skid, it almost seemed like maybe that wasn't guaranteed, but it seems to be. So that should be an overall boost for his value going into next year.
I had immense amounts of Eduardo Escobar to my delight last year. The steamer projection is a bit tepid. I'm a little surprised. Now, maybe it's because they haven't taken in the Mets into account yet. I don't know. But they only have him at 22 home runs. I think he likely hits more than that. But
they also had him at like a plant. I think they had him in a part-time-ish role or not a full-time role, but like almost like a super utility where they only had him getting like 560 plate appearances, where he's basically been around 600 for the three, you know, almost 700 in 2019, but about 600 for his last three full seasons.
Yeah, he's played a rate of 145 plus games for four straight years. So yeah, I think he's definitely going to be playing more than that. You got to be intrigued by the guy. Great eligibility, second and third. When you cross the diamond like that, it's fantastic. Should be in the lineup every day. I think it's all systems go. And I agree with you. I don't know why people still kind of sleep on him. It seems I think people just don't think about the guy. I don't know what it is, you know, I know his talent level, but I was shocked when I just saw that he hit 35 home runs in 2019, which I cannot believe. But yeah, he's going around 200 right now. This is a guy you want to get. I mean, great eligibility, should be in the lineup every day. I'm a big fan of Escobar.
Yeah, he's flawed, but he's a very good RBI man, which is something a lot of people don't look into. He doesn't hit into many double plays. He puts the ball in the air. He's good at driving in runners from third. He does those little things. I mean, 84 RBIs, 118 RBIs, 90 RBIs in his last three full seasons. He knows how to drive in batters, which is a good thing. And yeah, if you need someone for, again, that middle corner outfield, that he's a fine option. So the last move that the Mets have done so far of note has been Max Scherzer, which I'm stunned. I mean, I kept putting it out there that I wanted it to happen, but it's insane. Overall, change is nothing. We don't got to actually spend a lot of time here. Other than me being super excited, it didn't matter where he was pitching. He was never going to go pitch in a terrible environment. So it's the same as it always was. He's another year older, although, you know, coming off the best stretch, in the summer of his entire career, coming off the lowest ERA of his entire career, I think people are maybe writing him off, for the decline at a slightly aggressive pace. I think that, you know, a gradual decline is something to be expected, but, nowadays plenty of pitchers, especially of his caliber, have shown that it takes a little bit of time to completely kick him off the horse. And like I said, he's coming off the lowest ERA of his entire career and the best stretch in the summer of his entire career. So I think at least for this upcoming season, he's going to be absolutely fine.
Yeah. It doesn't really change anything based on where he went. I've long said that I don't really want to get involved just because of the age and stuff like that. Now, Max Scherzer, I love him personally. He does seem like one of those guys that will kind of maybe transcend the age thing and continue to be dominant. He's just a bulldog and he's just awesome. Yeah. You got to be thrilled, obviously, if you're a Mets fan. You can't really ask for a better guy. But yeah, I think it's, people are confident taking him where they are. I'm a little hesitant to take him in the second round, but hey, he totally could go out and have a Cy Young caliber year. So, yeah, we'll see. But I was a little bit surprised by this. Yeah, I wasn't quite sure that he'd go there, but Steve Cohen, I guess, was angry enough at Steven Matz that he decided, let's get this thing done. So
Steven Matz. You know what? Hold on, we'll get to him.
You've had your Mets time. Let's just reserve the rest of the podcast for all Steven Matz talk.
Well, you know what? They're coming. In my list, he's coming up soon enough. So let's talk about that. Okay. Steven Matz agrees to a 4-year contract with the Cardinals. Southpaw ground baller, has a team of gold glovers behind him. I literally think it's the best spot and the smartest spot he could have signed. I think we may have talked about this before, but I think this is a great spot. I think that, regardless of the, hilarious, like, you know, theatrics behind the scene that were involved, I think this was the best decision for Steven Matz. I think that he's going to, I think there's a maybe a career best year coming his way just because he could have a overperforming FIP type season with that solid defense behind him. It's just, it's a great environment for him. And they think there'll be a slight bump up from all the sharp people, but maybe not a bump up enough. I really do think that he is a great value that'll outperform his ADP. So I think, great spot for Mats.
I think so too. I think it's the number one destination really for a pitcher to go right now, because all you're talking about is like the defense, the ballpark, they're both fantastic.
At least for one that needs to rely on his defense. If you're not like a big strikeout guy and you need some participation, like Marcus Stroman, that'd be a good spot for him. Exactly. If you need defensive participation, the Cardinals are a good place to be.
Basically, the Cardinals just need to go sign former Mets ground ball pitchers this offseason. That's what needs to happen. But and that's been my thoughts about them in general. Like, I would like to see one more starter added, and Stroman would be just a perfect fit. And I think it would make that rotation, you know, I'd actually think, hey, this could be a good ball club and go into the playoffs this year. But yeah, as far as Mats, perfect place for him to go. I agree with you. I think people just don't like him for whatever reason and are letting that affect the situation that he's gone to. I mean, he's in the NL Central. This is a guy that I'm interested in because, you know, you can, if you need to stream him here and there, you know, you're not going to throw him in cores or something like that. I get it. But like, when are you not going to throw him other than that? I mean, like, he's always going to be an option you want out there. So yeah, great situation for Mats. I don't think it was a ridiculous contract by the Cardinals. Some people have been acting like that. You know, if you got the money to spend and you need a pitcher, then go ahead. But yeah, I'm intrigued by Mats here.
Who would you rather have? Anthony Descofani or Steven Mats?
Man, that's about as close as it can get. I think I would say Desclafani by a hair, but then again, I don't know that the Cardinals would be able to conjure up what that Giant juice did. So
I think those other guys in the Giants, I don't have ADP in front of me. This is just me assuming. I think there'll be guys like that taken well ahead of Mats, and Mats will just end up being this just good value in the back.
I was looking at it as a real baseball thing for some reason, but yeah, Mats was going 75 picks behind Desclafani, so
yeah,
that's wrong.
I think they should be right there with each other. So yeah, I like Mats. Yeah. You know the Cardinals should get Mets just non-tendered Robert Gesellman, who is a reliever and former starter. Again, another guy that would probably thrive with a good defense behind him.
Yeah, I like it.
Going over, Cardinals didn't do anything else, correct? Trying to lump all these times. All right, let's go to the Red Sox, who made their big free agent signing of Michael Wacha and James Paxton. Yeah. James Paxton's interesting. Gave him a one-year, $10 million deal with a two-year team option. So I guess if he looks good, they're just going to lock him in for two more years. Are you interested in either of these guys?
Not at all. Paxton, I could see him being out of baseball relatively soon. I mean, he's just had a bad break with all kinds of injuries. Wacha's really weird. Like, I thought you saw him, you know, all of us, just like Corey Kluber, which we'll get to. We saw Wacha go to the Rays last year, and it's like, okay, yeah, I am all over Michael Wacha. Performance was not good. I mean, well over a 5 ERA. I had him in plenty of leagues. I can't imagine he's going to do much better in Boston. I am not intrigued by either of these pitchers.
All right, we'll move it on to Seattle. Before we get to Robbie Ray, they acquired Adam Frazier from the Padres for Ray Kerr and Corey Rozier. I don't know why the Padres acquired Adam Frazier to begin with. It was a terrible fit. They had no spot for him, and he performed horribly. He's now going to Seattle, where I'm not sure what to expect, but I'm not interested. I'm still not interested, which could make him a value because I don't think anyone else is interested either, kind of the way they weren't interested last year. There's some people that are always going to have been on his bandwagon, but because of how poorly he performed down the stretch, I'm not sure what people are going to really be expecting him offensively in Seattle. So before we move on to the bigger move Seattle made, Adam Frazier, what do you think of there? Because, I mean, man, if he's the hitter we saw early in the season with Pittsburgh, you know, he could be a nice fantasy get in Seattle, but he's currently not getting that kind of respect. Does he deserve it?
Frazier, obviously, when he performs at the level that he did with Pittsburgh, is optimal. But also being on Pittsburgh was optimal because it was like he's going to play every day and he's going to hit like leadoff every day because Pittsburgh's terrible. But he goes to, like you said, I don't know why he went to the Padres. They already have like 10 guys deep at every single position. Then now with Seattle, not quite as deep as the Padres had been at that time. But it's like, you know, you got Dylan Moore there still if he's still.
Well, Frazier should play every day, bat around like second, right?
I guess so, but maybe. I don't know. I just feel like he could end up getting platooned as well because it's empty batting average. So, you know, if he goes into slumps and stuff like that, they give opportunities to other guys. I'm a little intrigued. I think he could maybe hit towards the top of the order, but, like, I kind of got burned by him in a few leagues going to the Padres. I could just see him, because he doesn't offer a lot outside of just some batting average, just maybe getting benched in favor of, like, Dylan Moore. Actually, is he even younger? I don't even know. Yeah, by a couple years. You know, I could see them opting for somebody else. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm not super into it, but he may play. I'm cautious. So he's with
like David Fletcher.
Mm-hmm.
No. Which I mean, but David Fletcher, even coming off his good year in 2020, wasn't given much respect in drafts because of the empty batting average. He's essentially the same thing. Like, he's being drafted where he should be because of the skills he has, correct?
Yeah, I think you're right.
All right, let's go to Robbie Ray. Surprised. He goes to Seattle, who gives up a draft pick to get him. We'll get to Toronto, who obviously went with Kevin Gausman. We'll get to that in a bit. Same contract, essentially, except Toronto could have just brought back Ray. They decided not to. Why? I mean, there's some... They're the ones who turned him around, so they know him more than anybody. So I don't know if I just want to like call that a red flag in my head. It's an easy one to draw. We know that there's some obvious things, like he had a 90% strand rate, you know, left on base percentage. He had a lot of you know, like a 268 BABIP. So we know that 284 ERA is more like a 3.5, 3.6, 3.7 ERA maybe, if you even everything out, but he's still a strikeout machine. And he is essentially a two-pitch pitcher, fastball slider, amazing slider, whereas Gausman was fastball splitter. Splitter, a lot harder to harness and control over the long term. So me personally, I would rather have Robbie Ray, but the fact that the Blue Jays actively decided to give the same exact amount of money to a different pitcher is literally the biggest red flag for me at all. I was all in on Ray this year because I thought worst case scenario strikes people out. But I got to say, the Blue Jays not wanting him back is just like, I don't know. It's just this little thing in my mind. Like, why didn't they want him back? Why?
Right.
He just won a Cy Young Award and they gave his money to another pitcher who I consider to be riskier. What the hell's up?
It's a very curious situation. And you know, what's funny is like, so Robbie Ray does go to a better situation. I mean, I think like, pretty objectively, like being in Seattle is better than Toronto in terms of like, you know, run prevention and stuff like that. But maybe we should just link these two guys because I have thoughts on both. And I think that people with Gausman and Ray, maybe I don't know if they will with Ray, but with Gausman, the sentiment is definitely not as good anymore. I mean, people are off of him now because of the move to Toronto, obviously. And I get that, certainly. I think people think there's some risk there. So he seems to be dropping. Maybe it may even create a buying opportunity for people who are still intrigued by him because he could drop pretty far. But with Robbie Ray, I don't know if people are going to say, look at what I did or what I just said there, like that he's going to a better environment, or if they're going to focus more on why would Toronto not want him and choose somebody else? Like, what is going on there? And there's already risk with both these guys, maybe even more so Ray, because it's like, is he really going to do this again? So, man, so many question marks and so much intrigue that I'd rather just not play at either of these parties. That's kind of just how I feel right now.
Well, I mean, I'm still very interested in Ray, and there's some very smart people. Alex Chamberlain's one of them. He goes out, he put out a tweet. It was very simple. It was like, he just put 90% strain, 90% strain rate, a 268 BABIP. What could go wrong? And I'm thinking to myself, 2.84 ERA, make that a 3.84 ERA. If he has a 3.84 ERA and a 32% strikeout rate, that's probably, I mean, you draft him like the 2.3 or the 3.4 turn where you can get him right now. Is that even a fail?
I don't think it's a huge fail. No, I don't think it is. Really.
No, I'm just so yeah, full regression And I'm still okay with it. So, I mean, I think I'm still on board. But, yeah, the fact that Toronto didn't bring him back bothers me. Yeah. But like you said, let's just go to Gausman. We're skipping over. Let's just go to Toronto. Have they done anything else of value? They brought in, like, a couple relievers.
Yeah, I don't think there's been anything else big on their front so far.
I mean, they let Semien go. Let's talk about Kevin
Gausman.
Extended
Berrios. They extended Berrios, but that's
over the last, you know, few days. Kevin Gausman goes there. Again, I already said, I'm very worried. He's back in the AL East. Not a great place to be for a pitcher. The splitter long term bothers me a bit. I'm just not going to draft him. I'm not saying I expect him to be bad. I expect him to be fine, but there's plenty of other people. I'm not drafting him. I'm just not.
I think I'm kind of with you. It's a drastic enough move also to a situation that I really don't like. I mean, can you imagine how many transfers from Giants to Blue Jays could be worse for a pitcher? You know what I mean? Yes. Obviously Giants to Rockies or Reds or something like that. I was DMing with some people about this the other night and trying to gauge, like, maybe there'll be some value there, but I don't know. For the things I like to try to do and the way that I like to get stuff done early in drafts with pitchers, I'm kind of with you. I'm a little cautious here with Gausman. I don't know what to think.
It's like amazing first half. He had like a, 1.73 ERA, second half 4.42 ERA. Strikeout rate, K minus walk, all about the same. He had a BABIP of 212 in the first half, 352 in the second half. FIP 257 in the first half, 365 in the second half. So kind of what to expect here, like, right? What do we think he really did over a full season if all things being considered? You look at a 281 ERA and a three FIP and then a 355 xERA. It's kind of bounced up all over the place. And he had a 0.94 home runs per nine, which his average for his career is around 1.2, 1.3, 1.4. So 1.2, 1.4. But since he's turned it around, he's been like 1.2, 1.3. So why don't we say 0.9? Let's bring it up to 1.1. You bring him over to Toronto full time. I want to say 3.28 FIP seems fair. If you think he's the exact pitcher you saw, 192 innings, which is, you know, his career high. I don't know. I can see him being that good, but I can also see him being significantly worse. I don't know. You know what it is? It's one of those things where if I do my, like, objective analysis, I think that he is probably still going to be completely fine. There's nothing that really jumps off the board that maybe necessarily should worry me. He had a bad second half, but then at the very end of the year, he had some really big games for the Giants. So he did come on big when they kind of needed him to. So, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, the last couple of years, he has performed really well, and there's been a reason for it. So it's just not an ideal landing spot. So we'll see. Maybe it'll depend. Maybe it'll depend on where he gets drafted. But enough people seem excited about him right now where I don't think I'm going to go there. But again, I appear to be just repeating myself at this point. So let's move on. Pirates obviously did nothing. Well, Pirates, they did acquire Zach Thompson. Susugo, does that matter?
Yeah. I don't know. People like it. I mean, he's got it. People really, I'm not even all right, kidding.
Well,
people
all right, are... well, there's a couple of interesting things here. They traded Jacob Stallings to Miami. We'll talk about that later. They got Yoshi Susugo, Jose Quintana, I don't care about, but again, if you're in a DC, you know, whatever, you draft bodies at a certain point. But Zach Thompson, I like, because he looked good in Miami when he came up, but obviously they have like 1,000 starting pitchers. He was buried there. So now he is going to pitch, which he went from like a guy you just couldn't even draft because he was like 15th on the depth chart of the Miami's, Young Pitching Hall of Fame. And now all of a sudden he's in there every single day. So you want to talk about Susugo? Go ahead. I think him and Zach Thompson are guys that, especially, I mean, for me, Thompson, Susugo, I think, they're interesting now.
Susugo's definitely going to jump up just because all of a sudden he's getting every day at bats. It seemed like he kind of turned a corner and stuff like that. So, yeah, he's going to be a late first baseman to people. Yeah, I mean, he'll probably jump up at least 150 spots from wherever he was going, maybe 200.
Oh, important context for this, everyone, in case you missed it. Colin Moran was designated for assignment.
Yes.
So it's just anyone's wondering, oh, is he going to fight for at-bats with Moran? No, he's gone.
I may have overreacted here. He was going 5'11", Susugo, so maybe 100 spots or so, but first and outfield eligible also. So, yeah, he's going to be one of those late bats in DCs you want to get, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's fine. The again, Zach Thompson, really quickly, as in the when he was over with the White Sox in the minor leagues, he had some really strong seasons from in 2018, 2019, ERA in like in mid ones, 1.69, 1.35. Was striking out like about one an inning, maybe, you know, a little over that. And then he goes to AAA for Chicago, Miami, striking out almost 10 and then 12 an inning. The results really weren't quite there, but he was, you know, he was striking people out, which was interesting to see. They bring him to the minor, they bring him up to the majors last year, 3.24 ERA, 3.69 FIP. He got away a little with his home runs. That was obviously an ideal park though. Coming over to Pittsburgh though, that is, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's not as bad as, it's not as cavernous as Miami, but PNC is obviously not a hitter's park. So yeah, it's another decent spot for him to be. Last year, he was only striking out, strikeout rate was 21%. His entire track record suggests he has a lot more in the tank than that. So I know there's always a guy in Pittsburgh people are interested in, like JD Brubaker, and Stephen Brault was released, by the way, but he was always someone people were interested in. But yeah, another guy here, Zach Thompson, he is firmly on my radar now for deep leagues like DCs and stuff, because yeah, if you're going to give him, if you're going to give him an everyday role, I think there's a very decent chance he could do well, you know, just not giving you any wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Good move by the Buccos.
Atlanta Braves, they signed Kirby Yates. He had Tommy John surgery last March, so I believe that delays him being probably ready to go until minimum June, maybe, or minimum May, maybe June. But once he comes back, Will Smith is not guaranteed to ever hold down a role because he's about as shaky as they get and during the regular season from anyone who didn't lose a job. So he's probably, they signed him to a 2-year deal so that they can have him next year when he's ready to go, fully ready to go. But what do you think this year, especially again in the, those draft champions, draft and hold type leagues or anything maybe in shallower formats, is this someone people should be looking for? Because if Will Smith is going to get faulty at any point, Kirby Yates is certainly a guy they could look to. Do you think he's going to have the ability to take that job at any point this season?
I am going to stay away from the Braves closer situation. I would say possibly. I do not put Will Smith in that, I guess, as much as you can say, quote unquote, concrete group of closers that we have. I know some people might, I don't. So yeah, I'm going to avoid that situation. Just overall answer that question.
And nothing else going on with the Braves. They may lose Freddie Freeman. What the hell are you guys doing? They may go to the Dodgers, may go to the Yankees. There's rumors the Red Sox may be interested, but let's be honest, they're not doing anything. Doesn't change anything for Freddie Freeman, but that's crazy. Let's see here. More transactions. Washington, they've done nothing. Orioles, we already talked
Cesar
about
Hernandez. Real quick, I don't want to spend a ton of time on these, you know, not fantastic players. I am intrigued by the Nats getting Cesar Hernandez. He's going to be playing every day. He might also pick up extra eligibility than second base. So he will actually shoot way up as a late option. But yeah, that just happened yesterday, I think. So.
And was it here? The White Sox got Kendall Graveman. Obviously, that doesn't really do anything outside of holds leagues. I don't believe they've done anything else yet. Miami, we skip by them. Jacob Stallings, they acquire. They also sign Avisail Garcia, and I believe they've DFA'd Lewis Brinson. We'll see if he climbs on anywhere. I think I may be forgetting another move for theirs, but probably nothing too big. They also got from Tampa Bay.
Joey Wendell.
Yeah, Joey Wendell. So interesting all around. You know, two catcher leagues becoming more popular, even though it's the old school method. Jacob Stallings even won catcher league. He's definitely a guy maybe worth taking towards the back end. Joey Wendell playing every day. He actually made the all-star team this year, which was stupid, but he did. Multi-position eligible. He'll be solid. And Avisel Garcia, one of the most perennially underrated players. His Statcast page is insane. We just talked about him a little bit. I think on the last show, he's max exit velocity is like 116, like near the league lead, like every year for the last 5 years. So the Marlins doing interesting stuff. Interested in any of those guys? Are Marlins? But I mean, it's such a terrible park. So what do you think of those guys?
Yeah, Marlins continue to be really interesting overall. But yeah, Avisel Garcia, lots of interest because that kind of commitment. Unlike the commitment the Brewers were willing to make to him as far as playing time, as we already discussed last week, I love it for Avisel. I actually got him also in the draft I'm in right now. But yeah, I like that a lot. They made a big commitment to him. And I love Jacob Stallings too. I already liked him as a Pirate, maybe as like a late second catcher, or if he somehow could become like your third catcher. I think people are more noticing that he was a good framer and stuff like that, and that he's going to play a lot. So yeah, basically all these moves are great. I think the Marlins continue to do smart things. So yeah, I'm intrigued by, you know, and Wendell, we'll have to see how much he plays. That's the only thing. I don't know if he'll be, I don't think he'll see that big of an uptick in playing time as he had with the Rays, but yeah, most of all, Avisel getting that contract is great, I think.
All right, here the Astros signed Hector Neris. Who cares? Brewers got a couple of backup catchers. Who cares? Detroit Tigers, they non-tendered Matthew Boyd. He will get a job.
That headline for the Tigers you wanted to talk about?
No, this is in order, everybody. Correa wasn't actually, or I'm sorry, Javier Baez is being officially announced today, so we'll get to him right after this. So I'm just going in order of how these things to go. But Matthew Boyd, they non-tender him. They obviously have a very young core of pitchers and maybe don't have a spot that they want to give to him. But plenty of good teams will want to add him as depth, but there are plenty of teams that can probably offer him, just flat up offer him a spot in their rotation. He was having a great year, especially from a called strike perspective before getting injured. So there's a lot of intrigue here, especially as a left-hander. So it seems every single year people are like, all right, this is the year for Matthew Boyd, but this will probably be the year you can get him as cheap as humanly possible. And I think that I will kind of be in as long as he's going to be somewhere. Like if I was in a draft today, I'd be looking to scoop him up at the very end before he gets a job, because I think it could jump way up depending. But again, if he gets scooped up by a team like the Mets who want him for depth, then, you know, his value takes a massive hit. So what are your thoughts on Matthew Boyd? Cause he'll definitely get picked up.
Yeah. I was a hashtag Boyd boy all winter last winter. I had tons of Matthew Boyd and was really pumped about him to start the year. I forget the exact injury now, but it wasn't great. And that is my concern for him going wherever he goes this year. I should know what it was. It did concern me, though, looking into it a little bit. So we shall see. He's definitely a pitcher to draft late, especially if he can get to a situation kind of like Detroit again, ballpark-wise. But yeah, I would say you need to be aware of his name, and we'll see where he does land.
What else? Oh, hell yeah. The other guy, Javier Baez.
Yeah.
6 years, $140 million, I believe. It's interesting because he had this. I mean, everyone is citing for when he came over to the Mets in September. Amazing September after he came back from injury. Pretty much the best month of his entire career. Almost erased his bad plate discipline. And I'm sitting here and the rest of Mets Nation is like, we need to bring this guy back. I'm like, it was a month. He actually had the worst chase rate, the worst swing strike rate, and the worst in-zone contact rate of his career last year. And I have no problem with him. He was very exciting. Watching him play every day is a different experience than just watching him from afar. He does so many things. Defensive wizard, and he's just very exciting. He has the ability to put a team on his back, but he is flawed. And that is a skill set that is not going to age well. It's just not. If you have an athletic skill set based on you outsmarting your flaws. It's going to get away from you as you get older. And that's what's going to happen with Javier Baez. So I know Tigers fans aren't pumped about this. I think they'll be excited at points. I mean, he's an exciting guy. This will kind of jumpstart them and it'll make them better. No doubt. But Comerica, not the greatest place in the world to play. If you're pulling the ball to either pole, it's not bad. It's actually a fair park or above average park for home runs if you are just pulling the ball. But if you're not, like Javier Baez likes to go to the gaps a lot, it's not the greatest place in the world. So from a fantasy perspective, this is not ideal at all, in my opinion. No. I think this actually is a tick. This is a tick down. A lot of times people like to play too much with park factors, good or bad, but I think this is a genuine downgrade for him. I don't know how much it should change his ADP, but yeah, I'm a little less psyched about this from a fantasy perspective.
I already wasn't super psyched about it. And yeah, that I feel the exact same way. And like, you know, I'm a sucker for, you know, we always talk about like, what do you do to win the game you're playing when it comes to fantasy baseball? And a big part of these draft champions or draft and holds, and sometimes even main event, can be eligibility. And you know, second and short is probably the most common dual eligibility that you get, which is what Baez carries. Now he goes to the Tigers, and I'm with you. I mean, the strikeout rate, the bottom could just completely fall out. You know, that possibility is there every year. Somebody I heard compare him to like a Carlos Gomez, which I thought was in so many ways accurate, just how, you know, the plate approach and stuff like that. I'm a little bit worried about Baez. It's one of those conundrums because he can do so many things, and I get why people like him and stuff like that, but I'm going to be very, very cautious with him. I don't feel too fantastic about this move.
All right. Not much else to go there. I just saw the Twins just posted a great couple of pictures of Byron Buxton with a giant smile on his face, holding up his contract, looking pretty intense and happy. So let's talk about that. The Twins have done really nothing so far, but they have extended Byron Buxton, gave him $100 million. There's been a lot of talk about the actual contract. We're not here. We don't care about that here for fantasy baseball purposes, but he is back with the Twins. We talked about him in the last episode, Trout versus Buxton, but you know, he is back with Minnesota and they feel confident enough to give him that deal. So I just want to say, I'm not skipping over the Twins. It's just, we talked about them last show. Nothing's really changed there. Congrats to Buxton. I'm glad you got a little bit of financial security there. It's a good deal for both sides, in my opinion. A lot of risk for the Twins, a little risk on Buxton's side if he does stay healthy, but overall it's pretty awesome. Plus there's some really cool incentives in there if he stays healthy that can bring his deal up. Very creative contract.
Mm-hmm.
Going over to the Angels, we know that they had signed Noah Syndergaard. They signed Michael Lorenzen to a one-year contract, a very popular sleeper last year, pretty much due to just Michael Simeone, SP Streamer's infatuation with him. Yeah. And just today or late last night, they re-signed Rossy Iglesias to, I believe, a four-year deal. So he is boom back in there. That's their closer. Not that he was not going to be a closer anywhere, but at least we know where he is now. So no change for him. How about Michael Lorenzen? Because we talked about Syndergaard, I believe, in a previous show. What do you think of Michael Lorenzen here? He's the different guy. Is he someone you're still – is he someone you're in on? I mean, if you were in on his skill set, it's maybe not the best thing in the world to be on a team with, like, I don't know, a six- or seven-man rotation or whatever the Angels are going to do.
Well, he dealt with some shoulder stuff last year, which is obviously scary, and he's just kind of been plagued by different things like that throughout his career. So, I mean, depending upon where he'll go, I may take a look here or there, and he is marketing himself or trying to remain, or I guess I should say become a starter still. But he's gone undrafted in a few of these draft champions, going about 630 overall. I think he'll definitely tick up with this news. But yeah, the fact that he had a shoulder issue and stuff last year, I'm not super excited to get involved, I would say.
All right, let's move over to the Texas Rangers. They only made one move, and it was signing Cole Calhoun, right? They did nothing else.
That's it. Yeah. Cole Calhoun. We'll see if he has a late career resurgence.
they spent a half a billion dollars, I think. They signed Corey Seager to a 10-year, $325 million contract, which just literally, I like almost spit out my drink. I can't imagine. I didn't think in a million years anyone would give that much to Seager, but here we are. And then 7 years, like 175 or something to Marcus Semien. Man, this is confusing. They're a team that's years away. Brutal starting rotation still. At least with Corey Seager, you can make the case that, you know, by the time they're ready to go, he's still young and in his prime. But, man, by the time they're ready to go, Marcus Semien's going to be ready to retire, and they're still going to be owing him tons of money. It's a horrible ballpark. Horrible ballpark. Joey Gallo hated it, and he has power that plays anywhere. I believe if you look into the Baseball Savant, again, park overlays, Marcus Semien loses 10 home runs going to Texas. I know that Corey Seager did well, especially in 2020 when the playoffs were just held there. He had no problem getting the ball out. But overall, that is not a great place to be for fantasy. This is just, I mean, good for the Rangers. The fans got to be excited. We're talking about fantasy. This is not a good place for either of those guys, but they're still very solid. So if you are interested in either of those, does this change anything for you? Because, man, the landing spot just sucks.
I literally have Corey Seager crossed off my draft board already. And this
before this or now?
Before this, just because.
All right. Well, if he signed with the Yankees, would that have changed anything for you?
No. I wouldn't have drafted him no matter what, because he's dealt with injuries and stuff like that. I want more speed a little bit coming from a shortstop. I just am not interested at all. I think the Rangers maybe wanting to try to unseat the Angels for the dumbest organization in baseball is all I can say, because these contracts are terrible. Marcus Semien, I think within 2 years, and let me say this, I love Marcus Semien. You and I actually talked about the deal that he may get early on in the offseason, and I threw something like this out there. But then we kind of came to an agreement that, like, we didn't think anybody would go that extreme in this day and age, but they did. I think we'll see in 2 years that this was a terrible contract. And again, good defensively, can do it all at the plate and stuff like that. I really do like Marcus Semien, and as a fantasy asset too. I think he was going maybe a bit too high based off last year. This is one of the worst places he could go. The Rangers will definitely regret this contract a couple years down the road. And I think they will with Corey Seager too, although maybe a few more years. If you got money to spend, I guess go ahead and spend it. But I just, these are not good moves. This reminds me of the Angels signing Pujols and CJ Wilson and Josh Hamilton and stuff like that. I think this is just terrible.
$325 million for Seager. They should have signed Ray and Gausman. That would have been a better call for their team.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, like, Saris, I think it was, put out the tweet showing like, the top of their lineup and everything, and then how it still is just putrid as you go down, and the pitching is terrible.
It's horrifying.
Right. And the pitching.
Oh my God. I put up a tweet on that where I put in the order, and I did that Chris Farley GIF where he looks happy and then he looks terrified, and everyone's like, and I'm like, oh, it looks so bad. And everyone's like, I didn't have Adolis Garcia in there. I had like McKinney, who was actually DFA'd, or he was non-tendered yesterday. And I was like, put in whoever you want. This outfield sucks. I think that they're going to platoon everyone. So I put all the left-handers in. And everyone's like, where's Ibanez? I'm like, he's probably being platooned. Any of them can be replaced. Adolis Garcia was just horrible in the second half. I think that is who he is. They adjusted. I don't expect him to adjust back here. I think it was just a great first half, and he's very flawed, and he should be replaced. It's so bad. The team's so bad. They did sign John Gray, 4 years, $56 million. I'm surprised he didn't get more than that. I would have thought the intrigue of him leaving Coors Field would have maybe would have perked a few more teams up. Red Sox are nowhere to be found. And they really need pitching. They instead go with a really weird direction of Waka and Paxton. It's just so many teams I thought would have been on in Gray. So, I mean, for his career, he actually pitches better at Coors than away. So, I mean, you can never truly tell how a guy's going to go. The whole mystique of how players perform in Coors is vastly misunderstood anyway. But how do you like him in Texas? I mean, it's a great spot for a pitcher as far as like just metric wise. It's a bad team, but this do you think he is someone you want to invest in? Because there will be a little bit of helium on him at some point. But he at this point is still a good target. If you think he's going to turn in a career best year, he is being drafted in a place that I was not a league winner, but like, you know, that Brian Reynolds, area of player or the Jesse Winker. He's a guy where he can be a sleeper, taken where he's taken, and still be a very big part of a championship team if he performs as you hope he does.
It's an interesting situation. It's definitely a tick up in my mind. I'm not super interested for the simple fact that he also dealt with some shoulder stuff, I think it was last year, and has had some injuries here and there. So I'm a little bit worried about that. I guess the Rangers aren't, but I don't really trust them at all with these moves. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that his draft price will go up, I think deservedly so. And he could turn in a couple good years here. I think there could be some good production from him. So I'm a little cautious because of the injuries, but yeah, I could see his stock going up.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect from him. I mean, last year, home, 4.02 ERA, away, 5.22. For his career, the slightly better home than away. But again, you don't know. It's one of those things where the more you're away from Coors, the better you play. And it's just a bad thing to go back and forth to. It changes the way you throw. So who knows what we'll get out of John Gray. But yeah, I'm kind of with you in general. And that kind of brings us to the end. I feel like I'm probably missing something. I try to do my best to cover everyone. But can you think of any players that we kind of missed over at least the last few days? We have already talked about the earlier moves like the Eduardo Rodriguez and stuff. Those were done a while ago. We've already talked about those. But is there any other players you think we've missed?
I don't think so. I figured maybe we could just mention a couple things I'm seeing on MLB trade rumors here, that the Blue Jays and, yes, Mets are both interested in Yusei Kikuchi. And a bigger one here, while the Reds are still talking about Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray, and Tyler Molly in trade talks, I don't know if I really believe that. But I saw, I can't find it now, but Matt Olson, yes, the Rangers and Braves, I said, interested in Matt Olson. So I don't know what teeth there is to that, but that's some other stuff that I'm just kind of seeing right now as well.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll believe it when I see it with the Braves. If they're not going to sign their own homegrown superstar to what seems to be a modest ask, I think it was like $160 million.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad. They should just give that to him. If they're not going to give him that, they're not giving up the prospects needed to get Olson. So they're not, that ain't happening. Braves, right. Just sign for, I mean, I'm a Mets fan. I want him out of this division as much as possible. I don't care where he goes. If he goes to the Dodgers, I don't care. As long as he's not in the AL East or the NL East, get him out of here. But you're stupid if you don't sign him back. So stupid.
Let me ask you, Matt, real quick, because I did just remember another one and I mentioned it earlier. Corey Kluber to the Rays. What do you think here?
When it first happened, I admit in my mind, I was like, all right, well, they just lit a bunch of money on fire. Mm-hmm. But he pitched well last year. I mean, he still was injured, but he did get in 80 innings. He pitched rather well when he did it. I think it was okay for the Rays. They've been doing some weird stuff. They've been giving away a lot of good pitching prospects, which I go, no one wants to second guess the Rays. They have a 40-man roster crunch too, but they've been doing some weird stuff this offseason, and this seems like a weird guy to spend money on. But if they're going to control his innings, I think that they can get enough out of him to make this well worth it to them, and there's lots of incentives in there for him. But the worry is, do they use him as a semi-opener a lot? Or, you know, do they get him out of there at 4 2/3 a lot of times? You know, is this going to really screw people in fantasy because he can't get to a decision? I think so. So even though I think, you know, they can work some of their magic on him, maybe he can have a semi-resurgence. Again, last year when he was on the mound, it really wasn't bad. But the 2019 is K minus walk 13.7, 2020 is 14.4. I mean, it's just really average. So yeah, I'm not expecting much here. So from the Rays, can it work out? Yeah, it can. From a fantasy perspective, I see nothing here worth investing in. I literally think it's a wasted draft pick to take him regardless of what round.
He was going 4.35. So he going to the Rays, though, and I was going to say, I actually maybe have a little bit intrigue at that point now that he's a Ray. However, that's probably going to undo itself because he's a Ray. I imagine that he probably does bounce up here. So I'm with you. He's, you know, I loved Corey Kluber so much, but like he's dealt with so many injuries and stuff like that. You know, it just reminds me of the Rays trying to do stuff with Chris Archer again and everything, and it's just not panning out. So yeah, I don't know if he takes a big leap up, I would probably be out on him.
And we're still waiting to see what Carlos Correa and Tyler Story are doing. Trevor Story, sorry. I said Tyler Story. You know what? There's only so many seats. Correa is going to get money, you know, no matter what. Someone's going to pay up for him. I get the feeling like Trevor Story may be left without a seat, and he may have to take a creative maybe one-year deal to just come back out next year when there's not a million Hall of Fame shortstops available. So you could look for some, you know, some teams maybe like the Dodgers who wouldn't mind having Trey Turner back at second. Maybe they get creative and try to get Trevor Story in there at a big time 1 year deal, something like that. So
I'll just say real quick, if the Trevor Story thing, if it starts to dangle that low, maybe even my Cardinals might put in a feeler on a 1 year deal. That would be a great spot.
I always thought that'd be a good spot for him in general long term, but I don't know how much they're willing to spend as far as what he'd be looking for. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about everything. So we'll see the rest of the day here. The lockout is coming. So there'll probably be a few more deals as soon as the show drops. No doubt something massive will happen to change something we said. But overall, if you have any other questions, we're here to talk about baseball all off season. If you actually read the tea leaves and the latest updates, the owners have actually caved quite a bit. John Morosi was on the MLB Network this morning, and he was updating some of the things that were going on. The players have actually seemed to be quite stubborn, asking, you know, arbitration and free agency to be knocked down by a whole year. But the owners have agreed to like double the minimum salary for players, have decided to get rid of draft pick compensation, have offered to get rid of qualifying offers, offered to give a automatic free agency age by if you turn 29, no matter when a team has brought you up to the majors, you're automatically a free agent. They want to give the universal DH. So there's a lot that the owners have caved to. So I don't know. I feel like this could be over sooner than later, but I don't think we're going to miss any games. I'm very, very optimistic. What are your final thoughts, Brian, before we're out of here?
Yeah, I would like to say that, as Jon Snow would say, winter is coming with this lockdown. But I kind of feel like you. I feel like I feel optimistic. I don't think we're going to miss games here. You know, it's almost just like, how laborious do these guys want to get with another just months of going back and forth after the horrifying COVID ordeal? I mean, like, do you really want to play this game again? It's almost just like a stalwart that somebody's just going to have to cave. And maybe it is the owners, like you're saying. But that's the rest of the thoughts I have. I'm looking for the season to get started on time and just amped to continue drafting over the rest of this offseason.
All right, everybody, if you want to find me on Twitter, MATTWI77IMS. You can find Brian at Brian J. Seymour. Happy to talk baseball anytime, everybody. So enjoy the rest of your MLB offseason. You got about what does it look like, 11 hours left. Then you can look forward to the New York Mets managerial search, because they can actually do that during the lockout, because it's not player related. So every beat writer in the world is going to be following around the Mets poor managerial candidates, because that's the only thing they'll have to do.
Bobby Valentine.
That would be a fucking amazing. I would be so on board. He has the time. He ran for like mayor of some city in Massachusetts or Connecticut, and he lost.
Really?
It was very recently. So anyway, that didn't happen for him. So we'll see what it is. Thank you for listening to Turn Two. Enjoy your offseason drafts. Join a best ball draft. If you need your baseball fix, no better way to do it than to jump into a draft. So we'll be back. We'll be back with the Outfielder Part 2 next time you hear from us. See everybody.
My oh my, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play fantasy.
I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two, turn two, turn two, what it do? Win leagues, catch out, catch out.